M25. Number 1B.
And so brings us to the point where, in the third degree, we have those spiritual qualities of wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding. You see, spiritual power, love, health, holiness, all those spiritual qualities of reality which do no more accept any problem. So in the third degree, mortal mind disappears and man in God's image appears. So never, never, never start with the second translation. It's hideous. If we can see that, then we can perhaps see a fourth point, namely that none of these translations can stand alone. That really the first translation cannot stand alone. We cannot not have understanding and not have its impact on our existence. That the first translation impels the second translation. Can't stand alone. We don't need to fear that we only have understanding and do not know how to demonstrate it. We don't need that to have that fear. Understanding is all that is necessary, because if we live and move and have our being in the Christ understanding, we jolly well experience the Christ understanding and can't experience anything else. Nor can the second translation stand alone, because evil cannot be something per se. And here we come to a very touchy point, because evil cannot stand per se. Evil is namely nothing. It has no self-existence. It has no entity per se. It only shows that what evil is that we haven't understood the first translation. That's all there is about evil. So not understanding the first translation means evil. That's evil. That's sin. That's animal magnetism. Animal magnetism is nobody, is nothing, is not a person, is not an organization. Animal magnetism is our reluctance to understand the first translation. That's all there is about animal magnetism. I know that Christian scientists in general are scared out of their boots about animal magnetism and malpractice. They always see all the devils around them and just malpracticing on that poor, good, uprighteous Christian scientist. Oh. All the malpractice we experience is that we do not accept the Christ translation, the first translation. If we understand, if we accept that Christ translation, then there is nothing influencing us, because that first translation is our new Niagara Fall, you know, the whole hooding of life, truth and love, just pouring everything out on ourselves, you see, so that we are overflooded, really, with that superabundance of ideas. Where could there come something in which is of the opposite nature? How could something go against that stream of life, truth and love? And that was Mrs. Eddy's purpose of giving the chapter on animal magnetism as the fifth chapter, namely indicating that the fifth chapter is showing the Christ as the Word, and showing that if we don't accept the Christ as the Word, if we don't have that understanding of the Christ, that alone is animal magnetism. But that animal magnetism per se does not exist. It is only nothing. And she does not attribute a single quality to animal magnetism. It has no power, it has no person, it has no place, it has no chance, it has no law, it has no influence, nothing at all. It is just not anything. So we know now how to handle animal magnetism, and it's a very easy thing to handle it. We just have to accept the Christ. If we accept the Christ, we don't need to be afraid of animal magnetism or malpractice. Yeah. All right. Then perhaps we could see that therefore to begin with the second translation is really the religious way, whereas to begin with the first translation is really the way of the scientist. He really begins with the principle and not with error. No scientist begins with error and tries to arrive at a solution. He always puts away an erroneous situation and goes back to its principle and reasons from that principle. Another point which we can see is that the pivot of those two translations is understanding. Understanding. But let's see what sort of understanding. It's not our understanding about God. It's God's understanding of himself. Because it's Christ's message from God to man, putting really into our understanding, into our consciousness, the synonymous terms, the understanding of the synonymous terms, so that there is that divine coincidence between God and man, and not between man and God. The Christ is depicted as that spiritual agreement and coincidence between God and man, not between man and God. Because it shows that the starting point is God understanding himself, translating that understanding to the point of idea and of man, and there is the understanding of God. The understanding of God is something very different than the understanding about God. The understanding about God is a human concept of what God is, whereas the understanding of God is the understanding that God himself has of his creation. And therefore we see that if we go with the synonymous terms in the Christ translation, that understanding comes to us. It's Christ with us. And then another point which I have tried to indicate is that these two translations therefore give us an explanation of evil. This is a great point, and I just want to be a bit hard at it, because I feel so much that we still have a very religious sense of being, that we still, as students of Christian Science, are very, very much thinking in terms that something is good and that something is evil. We shouldn't. The concept of God, of good and evil, is a concept of the dualistic thinking. And no dualistic thinking, and no dualistic logic, not even a two-value logic, is really good enough for the science of being. The science of being only knows a one-value logic. That one value which is the divine being. So that we should never judge any situation, whatever it is, as good or as evil. The moment we judge it as either of them, we are falling away from the standpoint of the synonymous terms, because the synonymous terms are one-value logic. They do not see an opposite. They only see its own value, its own isness. And therefore, every judgment of good and evil, of healthy and sick, of true and wrong, of constructive and destructive, all that does not belong to a true Christian scientist. Why? Because good and evil are religious concepts. They come from a false sense of idea. In the Bible, you know, there in the paradise right at the beginning where things went wrong, it was said that in the midst of the Garden of Eden were two trees. Well, in the midst of something can only be something. There can't be two things there. But what could be there is one thing, namely a coin with two sides, with head and tail. And that's what they wanted to explain, because these good people at that time didn't know anything about Greek logic, and they or not even about logic itself. That was too early for them. So they had somehow to explain that sense that in the midst of the paradise was the tree of life and the tree of good and evil. So two trees at the midst, in other words, they were showing two aspects. If we have a divinely subjective aspect and go out from the one value logic of the synonymous term, we have the tree of life. If we leave that standpoint and look at that tree of life from the human standpoint, we have the tree of good and evil. Because the human mind only operates in a two value logic. In good and evil, in right and wrong, in left and right. And so on. Showing that what we should see and learn as the, one of the greatest lessons about the Christ is that the idea is beyond the question of good and evil. That instead of judging in good and evil, we just should have idea. An idea is neither good nor evil. We are very much inclined to say, yes, an idea is not evil, but it is good. And so we just stress one of the two values because we like it better. But that does not solve the question. The question is only solved when we see that in reality nothing is going on but the working of the idea. That's the tree of life. The idea. And that idea is neither good nor bad. It's the idea. It's the truth. It's the fact. And that fact cannot be, from a divine standpoint, judged as good or as evil. Just in mathematics or in arithmetic, 2 plus 2 is 4. Now, is this good or is this evil? It's a fact, and it is neither good nor is it evil. We may call it good when we have 2 millions and add another 2 millions. Then we have 4 millions, and then we say, that's jolly good. But if we have 2 million debts and add another 2 million debts, we don't say that's jolly good. That's 4 million, but they are debts. And so we say to the same calculation, 2 millions plus 2 millions, is it evil? Truth has nothing to do with good and evil. It's our human limited viewpoint that attributes something to reality which reality doesn't have, namely the attribute of either being good or being evil. Let's get rid of that. Our whole life becomes light. We take off the whole burden if we don't constantly, from morning to night, judge ourselves, our situation, the world, and everybody according to that two-value logic. If we do that, we have a constant strife within ourselves. We have a constant feeling something has to be put straight. We have a constant feeling we have to make this and that and the other demonstration. We have the constant feeling that everything is just running down the drain. If we have the Christ idea and just see that truth is the Christ and brings forth just the Christ, that truth, infinite truth, and we leave that judging of good and evil, then we are jolly happy and just say, wonderful, the Christ is going on, the idea is going on, that idea is working, that idea is operating. That idea is operating in two ways. It's operating to bring out the idea as manifestation of mind. And that first translation is the idea that brings everything which needs to be corrected right straight. And that's good too, that's wonderful too, that's not evil. And suddenly we begin to see that whole second translation, which seems so awful, so dark, like the devil in disguise, we just leave it and say, whatever happens, which humanly we call evil, is nothing else but the idea at work. It's the idea at work. Because the idea does not want anything which is not right to exist. So if there is resistance against the Christ translation, then there is chemicalization, then there is uproar, then there is turmoil, then there is strife, then there is struggle. And humanly we call that chemicalization, that struggle, that crisis, we call evil. Instead of seeing that it is the working of the idea. And therefore most Christian scientists are up in arms against animal magnetism, against evil, against error, fighting like hell against evil, when they should say, wonderful, this thing couldn't come up, it couldn't be uncovered if there would not be an idea working. The idea is going to stir up the muddy riverbed. The idea is doing it, but the idea is fine. Let's accept that. Let's say yes to that situation instead of trying to go against it. Takes off the burden. Takes off the burden that you just stand there and say, okay, 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 whatever happens, be calm. Stay with the idea. The idea works. And the idea is beyond good and evil. And even if humanly it is called evil, it's still the idea. There are not two. We can try as hard as we like to make two, but we can't. Being is one. It is one being, and therefore one idea operating, and that one idea is operating in every way. No matter if people like it and they say it's good, or if people don't like it and call it evil. The idea matters. Therefore, if we stay with the idea, we free ourselves of thinking that something evil is going on, and we jolly well enjoy thinking that the idea is going on. Makes life quite different. Absolutely different. But you can see that this is only possible if we drop our whole human system of reference. Without that, we'll not find an answer. Because then we go out from a human system of reference, and that is based on the dualistic logic, and that knows good and evil, and so our lives will be one long struggle between good and evil. And we will find out after a while that we have been struggling more against the idea and really against evil. Because the idea wants to lead us forward into new channels, into new fields, into fields that we do not know of. And because we do not know of humanly, we are afraid of it. We hold back. We don't want to go. We hold back and think there is something wrong at work. This is the way, really, that Mrs. Eddy explains not only evil, but also matter, the physical, and translates matter right back into spirit, because she said Christian Science understood, that's the first translation, translates matter, the second translation, translates matter back into spirit. Meaning there is but one substance, and that substance is neither spiritual nor material. It's spirit. And that's all there is. It's spirit. And we lose that sense of having to do with the spiritual universe and with the material universe, with the material creation and the spiritual creation. We still make a duality, though to one creation we give all the nice things we can think of. But the standpoint is still wrong. The only standpoint that is right is to go out from spirit, and that spirit only knows one substance, and that is spirit. And that does not know matter at all. Therefore, she says, matter is only a misstatement of mind. It's only a misstatement, really, of spirit. Or, I don't know if I have told you last time that I just had read how the physicist Weizsäcker in Germany, who is a very well-known Nobel Prize winner on physics, he stated that today the physicists can define matter in the old metaphysical language by saying that matter is spirit, comma, when spirit is not beheld as spirit. See, he says, if we don't stick with spirit and stay with spirit and stay with spirit and look out from spirit, if we don't behold spirit as spirit, then that is matter. Then we have left that standpoint, on that, leaving that standpoint of spirit, that's really matter. And in this way, Mrs. Eddy tried to explain it to Adam Dickey when she said to Adam Dickey and put her finger on his arm and said, what is this? And Dickey said, this is material. Mrs. Eddy said, no, it is spirit. And Dickey naturally said, I can't see that. But she was insistent and said, this is spirit. And what she wanted to explain him in her last years was to explain that there is only one spirit, and that spirit is neither spiritual nor material, that there is one substance, that is spirit. And so in this way we begin to see there is just one thing, namely spirit, and not that duality of good and evil, of spirit and material. All that goes right out if we stick with the synonymous term and go out from there. And in this way, we find our answer to the whole question of duality. That question of duality, you know, as in, in Apocalypse, where John the Revelator was presented the seven vials full of the last plagues by an angel. You see, the idea presents to the human the whole, the sum total of human misery. The idea, the angel was doing it, not the devil. And said to John, come, I will show you the Lamb's wife. Said, if you come and look at it properly, you don't see the seven vials full of the last plagues. If you come and look from the unity of love wedded to its own idea, if you look at it from the Christ point of view of coincidence of God and man, you can't see the sum total of human misery. It's not possible. But it was the angel that was inviting him to change the standpoint, to change that standpoint from the human aspect to the divine standpoint, to the divine aspect. This is what we all have to do in one way or the other, to start with the divine system of reference. And from the divine system of reference, we have no concept of good and evil. We only have that wonderful concept that there is the idea of God. So stick to that. Christ is the spiritual idea, working, 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 working for us, all by itself, and so we don't have really to fear anything. Well, more or less we have come to the end of this Christ subject, but you can see how far involved this subject is. The moment really we begin to see the Christ in its dimensional way.